Welcome to Hoops HD, everybody. This is a special, very special podcast we have recording here actually on the afternoon of October 15th. I'm Chad Sherwood, joined by David Griggs and Rocco Miller, along with our very special guest for today, the athletic director of at Toledo, along as well as a member of the current NCAA Division I Selection Committee. Mike O'Brien is joining us. Mike, to begin with, thanks a lot for coming on. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, and nice to be with you guys.
Mike, we just wanted to get right into it here. First of all, I guess let me start with this. You are the AD at Toledo here, and I know it's kind of football season right now, middle of October, coming up on basketball next month. But your basketball team there Toledo's had coming off a couple of division championships and looking pretty good heading into this year as well. We look at possibility that you could be thrown out of the room while Toledo is discussed as the NCAA participant next year?
Well, I would welcome being excused from the room to if the Rockets can't get in the tournament. But yeah, Todd Kowalczyk, our head coach, has done a terrific job here. And last, as you indicated, we've won the West Division of the Mid-American Conference the last couple of years. We won 25 games last year and had some injury issues at the conference tournament. And for the time being, the league is a one-bid league, but hopefully that changes, and would love to see the Rockets be a part of the big show.
Yeah, well, you had a team way inside the bubble last year. And, Mike, we do a show every week called Under the Radar, which is basically the 22 non-multi-bid leagues. I'm purposefully not saying mid-major because I hate that term. And one of the – I do think it is a misconception is that the committee doesn't really pay attention to them, but they do. And whenever there's evidence of that, Wofford getting a 7, Buffalo getting a 7 – and then I think it was Greensboro out of the SoCon that was there until the very end. You guys watch literally all 353, all 32 leagues, don't you?
There's no question. And each committee member is assigned various leagues as a primary and or secondary source for those leagues. We each have 7 of them. And every team, is clearly looked at, and obviously as we get into the meat of the season, to be very honest, the concentration is on those that have more of a much better record within their own leagues.
Mike, I got to ask you, how many games – I think last year was your first year on the committee, but how many games are you watching a week? I mean, what type of commitment is this for many teams?
It's pretty intense, and there's a lot of time involved, but I'll tell you, I think you could talk to every committee member. We love every second of it. It does take a little time, obviously some early morning or late night games. If there's, games at night, we can I'll generally try to get in and watch a game or two from the previous evening on Synergy, and there's no commercials, and so you can kind of zip through a game fairly fast, and at times you don't need to watch the entire game either. And so it's just trying to we talk about in our business time management a lot, and so it's just trying to juggle a couple of balls and do the best you can, but we do watch a lot of hoops.
Yeah, hi, Mike. This is Rocco Miller with BracketsHere.org. I appreciate you spending some time with us today. I just wanted to get an idea of, now that you've had some time to look back on your first year on the committee, what that experience was like. And maybe like a second part to that question is, I read about a few teams in your contingency brackets that were actually kind of wrapped up partway through the day on Saturday. More specifically, the Pac-12 championship game, I think I read, you had a contingency of Oregon were in the bracket if they won, but regardless of what happened with Washington, they were going to be in the same slot. Can you give us a sense of like when you do wrap up your work and just your overall experience last year?
Well, last year being my first year, as you indicated, Rocco, it was a great experience. The committee is obviously I've been in the business for some time, and the committee, they're friends, colleagues. We can agree to disagree. No one's jumping on the table in disagreement. It's very professional throughout the days in New York and even on the various phone calls. So I really enjoyed it. And it's a very fair process. No secret that one of the tools that gets the most publicity that we use is the net. And then there's other services that we use, but the net's the one that's out there a little bit. And I think that's provided, I hope, some comfort to a lot of people, including the coaches, obviously. But my experience was great. I loved it, and look forward to this year. And you know, your second part about contingency, we have to have, if this happens, then there's a bracketing here. If that happens, we have to have contingency plans, especially for that Sunday before the final bracket's rolled out.
Mike, let me ask you this. There are 10 people in the committee room, which only means there's probably about 12 or 13 different opinions, if it's like any committee I've ever been involved with. But do you find that? Do you find that there are different committee members who may make an argument versus, you know, A, the net is here, or why this is more of a Ken Pomeroy type of team or the like? Or
well, you know, not necessarily. I mean, we have each committee member, as I indicated, is assigned conferences. And so those committee members are the quote-unquote experts on that specific conference. And so they're the ones that have the data, the expertise, the kind of behind-the-scenes things as far as strength of schedule, which we have all this data in the room. That's never – there's no secrets. Injuries and who had big wins and really bad losses. And so the individuals that are responsible for those leagues, those are the ones that really kind of dictate the pace of the room when it comes to various conference teams.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, Mike, let me say that, like, you know, some people play fantasy football or they're gamers. We at Hoops HD kind of do this. We play mock selection committee. I'm not even kidding. We have 10 people that go through the process. That's sort of what birthed the whole website, because it was like, well, why don't you guys put that out there? One of the things that I've run into as a fake committee member is situations where a team from a league like the MAC or the Western Athletic Conference, you just feel that they're so much better than what their profile indicates. And when you look at that 11 and 12 line, it's like, I'd rather play anybody almost on the 8 or 9 line rather than play them. But because the paper isn't there, because the credentials isn't there, it's hard to argue with everyone else to get that team higher up. I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on that, and I'll share one more. I think that it's important to get that right, not just for that team, but for the team that they're matched up against.
Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, that was it. I was just kind of – I was wondering if you'd ever run into that, or if that ever comes up to where – how do you argue for a team that you believe is better than their paper?
Well, I mean, obviously, kind of like I said, we have more data than you can imagine in front of us. And we count on that. And we also count on the expertise as far as a specific conference that we're for a team that we're talking about. And so, I don't want to say it's cut and dried, but it's a little bit better process than some folks can imagine. I mean, all of a sudden we're not switching, you know, going from someone that is possibly a 7th seed to an 11th seed or anything like that. I mean, it's a very detailed process that I think works out very well.
Hi, Mike. Rocco again. Question for you just on the overall committee. And there's a perception, I think, out there in the college basketball, you know, world of fans and media that we're now in a position where there's 4 committee members from the Power 6 conferences, but the rest of you and the majority are from – like David said, we don't want to call them mid-major conference, but not in the Power 6. So we'll call it the group of 26. And you're actually, you know, of course, representing the MAC. So does that kind of tip the scales when you're maybe in a debate with like a UNC Greensboro against perhaps like a St. John's? Or is that not a factor at all? How do you feel that plays into it, and how do you represent the MAC in the room?
Well, obviously, I'm not assigned the MAC as one of my conferences.
Right, right.
And so others are, and you know, forgetting the MAC, if I'm part of the Big Ten and I know the Big Ten, but not assigned that league, you know, it's the committee member has every right to talk about the various teams in that league because they're so familiar with it. But really, last year, as an example, and I think we talked about it earlier, the I'll just say the group of five conferences, I'll use that term, were very well represented, I thought. And deservedly so, because they competed and won some games.
Right. Yeah, and of course, Belmont was able to get one of those last four spots. So it certainly was evident there in the bracket reveal. And of course, Greensboro would have got in if Oregon would have lost Saturday night. The next question for you is, last year the committee or the mock selection committee in February revealed that tiers within both Quadrant 1 and Quadrant 2 were now going to be considered. And I thought that was interesting because just as a bracketologist over the last 8-9 years, I always kind of did that on my own where I wanted to chop that top half into like more elite wins. And I think you guys are calling that Tier 1A. Right. And then the rest of Quad 1 is B. And then you've also got 2A and 2B. Like you mentioned earlier, you have a lot of data to sort through. How big of a role did that play in? Was it easier visually to see like, okay, this team does have a lot of quad one wins, but they're all in the 1B area. And I'm more impressed with this other team that may have just a couple wins, but they're in 1A. Any scenarios like that stand out to you?
The breaking it up into quadrants was a significant assistance, especially for me as a new member last year. Because you could, again, you have it in front of you as to how many wins in quad one, how many losses in quad one, those losses, who were they against? And in turn, did you have a bad loss in quad three or four? And so it really helps. It really makes a difference. You can also, off of the quad, you can also look into strength of schedule. You know, if somebody's in quad one and plays all quad four non-conference games before they get into the league play. I'm just using that as an example because that happens on occasion.
Correct.
And Mike, I guess to follow up on that strength of schedule, do you also have discussions about, you know, teams that may go in there and put together what we may look at in October, November as a great schedule, and as it turns out, the teams end up playing not being that good, and that killed your strength of schedule. But
it happens, and we talk about, you know, there's something to say for an intent to schedule, and we had a couple teams that would fall under that category last year that I think were rewarded for intending to make a good to make a good schedule. And you know, I mean, I'll just use Toledo as an example. Last year we thought we had a very competitive schedule. As it turned out, some of those teams we thought would be at least quad two ended up in quad three and four. It happened.
Yeah. Kind of along those lines, you mentioned strength of schedule. I want to think that you do this. I'd just love to hear you say it. When you look at how what do you consider when you look at how hard a game actually is? Because I think while certainly the opponent is important, Belmont, for instance, played at Jacksonville State, played at Lipscomb, played at Murray, won all three. And I think those three combined teams lost a total of six games at home. Three of those were to Belmont. Now, while they may not have been high in the rankings, to me, that is hard to do. That is a hard schedule. I would argue that's a lot harder than beating a good team at home who, while good, loses more than half of their road games. So do you look at more other than just who is the opponent?
Oh, yeah. Again, that's all in the discussion when the committee member who has that particular conference, that's all part of that. And as far as, you know, there's some really bad home losses and there's some great road wins. And so that's all taken into account. And, but we have all of that in front of us and it, you know, just kind of depends as to what's in play, depending upon how many teams are left too.
I got to ask Mike, I don't know if you even know this yet because it's, I don't even know if you've had any meetings yet, but do you know what your conferences are going to be this coming year?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. You want to share? It's okay if you can't share, but I just,
Hey, we had that pause.
Okay.
I have, it's not a big secret. I have the America East, the Big East and Horizon. And then as secondary, Big West, Missouri Valley, Mountain West, and the WAC.
Okay.
Great. When, Mike, thank you. In regards to scheduling, just another question on that topic. There's a lot of programs out there. And again, scheduling, you know, I follow this very closely throughout the offseason. It comes together very late. It's not like football where we know years in advance who's playing who. And so you might get a team, and I'll just throw a name out there, like a Utah State, who now a lot of people have in their top 25, and all of a sudden they're getting interest from big teams, and they can maybe pull some games off on their schedule. But maybe some of the other teams, like a New Mexico State, can't. Do you guys take any of those challenges into consideration at the end of the year when you're looking back? And also with the power conferences, many of them now moving to 20-game conference schedules and eliminating even more opportunities. But you're also representing the MAC conference, who probably not able to schedule as many Big Ten or Big East opponents, for example. You know, is some of that being considered more as we get into this era of less opportunities for anybody not in the Power Six to play those teams?
Yeah, we talk about that, and the schedule is the schedule. You know, I mean, we're not having people from power leagues come and play at Toledo. We're just, it's just not going to happen. We know that.
Right.
And so we're on the road or maybe a neutral site and get in some type of a tournament. And so, and obviously, as you indicated, some of the other leagues are going to 20 conference games, but the schedule is the schedule. We talk about it, and some people do a better job than others. And we also know that given our calls to various conferences, that teams really do try to strengthen their schedule, and sometimes it's just not going to happen. But we take all that into account.
Okay, yeah. So just a follow-up question to that. With the opportunities decreasing over the years and into the future now, does that mean the offense, the efficiency ratings and some of those statistics you guys are looking at closer and closer now, starting last year, does that mean that those factors are even more important than they have been in the past?
Well, I don't know. I don't want to kind of get into any hypotheticals because we have so much data in front of us that I really think that, and just kind of speaking of the process, that it comes out very fair.
Is there any actual going on of like phone calls being made while in the committee room to either conference commissioners or coaches or athletic directors to find out?
No, by the time we get there, that's all done.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, this might be a little bit loaded, but what is something that almost no one knows about the committee that you now know that you would like for people to know?
That's really loaded.
Yeah.
So, I'll tell you, it's an incredible experience. It's the best group of people, and I've been on a lot of committees NCAA-wise, and I'll tell you, the one thing that people don't realize, in addition to the committee and their professionalism, because they're all my friends, is that the NCAA staff is unbelievable as to what they provide us. And that speaks to the March Madness itself. But people, you know, I know people take shots at the NCAA, but I'll tell you, that group, relative to men's basketball specifically, they are on their game.
Yeah.
And they provide us everything we need.
Yeah, and I know men's basketball, to further your point, is sort of the holy grail. It's all commissioners and senior ADs for the most part. But I think that even for a D3 country club sport, they take it very seriously. Not knowing anything about the NCAA, but that's the impression I'm under. They actually do a good job with that.
No, it's first class. They treat us very, very well, and like I said, just kind of getting back to all the things that were provided to assist us with the data and help us with bracketing, what have you. The NCAA, I can't speak highly enough of that group.
Well, to talk about things that they provide you, how about the food they give you in the committee room?
Ice cream.
That's not too bad. Yeah. But, you know, we spend a lot of time. We spend a lot of time throughout the year. In fact, this afternoon, later today, I had my first conference phone call. And so it is beginning.
Yeah.
And wow. So here we are in October, and we spend a lot of time, and they reward us. And again, I really enjoy it because it's great people to be around.
And Mike, this is Rocco again. This is a great conversation. Appreciate it. Just going back to something I mentioned briefly earlier, I'm really just curious about the process. And, you know, it seems to me like the process ends a little bit earlier each year, whether that's by hours or even last year. I think I read a few places, but if you can confirm it, that'd be great. That you guys were mainly wrapped up by sometime in the middle of the day or evening Saturday, which just meant all that was left were contingency brackets. With that being the case, if that is the case, for those games that are left over either late Saturday or early Sunday, the teams that already know they're in the tournament, besides the motivation of winning a conference championship, if I'm coaching that team, what is my motivation to keep my star players in for that entire game, knowing that my seed may not be impacted besides the conference championship?
Well, without getting into a lot of detail, it's hard to say whether the seed will be affected or not, because the games Sunday are still in play. And so if whomever indicates that, you know, that things are done on mid Saturday night, that's not accurate.
Okay.
There's still too many games left on Sunday, and that affects the bracketing. And we have a variety of brackets out there to work with on Sunday prior to those championship games concluding.
So Mike, you may actually have two contingency brackets that don't change the teams that are in there, but may change the seeding based on those results. Is that kind of what we're looking at?
We have multiple brackets, yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's about... real quick, I know we're running out of time here. I did want to ask this. I asked this to actually David Warlock, who you mentioned off the air last year. I've always thought that we should overhaul this whole thing and put one person in charge of it, and that person should be me. I was wondering if that got any traction at all among the committee members throughout the past year.
No, believe it or not, that really never hit the room.
Oh, you know, well, that's –
that discussion never
– I don't believe it.
I'm sure you don't.
Well, Mike, again
– I have another question for you real quick. I have my own kind of breakdown of, I think, all the things you guys care about. I try to pay attention closely to everything that the committee members say when they're interviewed, especially the chairman. And I've kind of whittled it down myself, and I just kind of want to get your opinion on it. Non-conference strength of schedule, clearly a big deal. I think overall strength of schedule, if you're trying to divide teams, especially from opposite conferences, is a little bit less important, because, of course, if you're in a stronger league, your SOS will go up. If you're not in a strong league, it will go down. So the only true, like, common denominator there is the NCSOS non-conference. Do you agree with that, or do you think there is some layer of importance to the overall strength of schedule?
Well, I think the overall strength of schedule is important, and that is all that's all contained within that data that we have relative to Quad 1 through Quad 4.
Mike, again, we want to really, really appreciate you having come on with us and spending some time with us here, and the great work that you and all the committee members do. I think that, I know last year was your first year, I think that we uniformly thought this was one of the best brackets we had seen in a long, long time as well, which is clearly thanks to you being on there.
Yeah, we credit you entirely for that. Like,
I wasn't quite sure how much quote unquote noise there would be afterwards. And to be very honest, I was pleasantly surprised because, granted, I have a bias, okay? I was pleasantly surprised that it was perceived as positive as it was, because, you know, part of March Madness is also criticizing the committee.
It is, yeah. So,
and I was surprised. Of course, we all receive emails. That's okay, because people have passion about their teams. And so I was really surprised as to a lot of the national media that said, you know, the committee did a pretty good job.
Well, I absolutely agree, especially there are years where I agree with it more than others. I'm sure that that's surprising. But the one thing that I liked about last year was just I thought that, like, they looked at the teams, like, holistically, not just at a superficial, like, how many top 50, how many top 100. I mean, I thought they rewarded I keep getting back to Belmont, but that team in particular for winning games that were hard to win.
Right. Yeah, we take into consideration bad losses, great wins, home and away. You know, again, we have it all in front of us, and so it's fairly easy to see which or what.
Well, thanks again for joining us, and good luck to your Rockets this upcoming season, as well as your football season going on there as well. So thanks again, Mike.
I appreciate it. Take care, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mike.
All right, bye.